Good morning. Hey, my name's Tim. It's great to be with you and sing with you. I want to tell you about my day yesterday. I had a great day. First half of yesterday, I got to spend in a partnership class, which we do a few times a year, and we had one yesterday, and I think there's 15 people in it, and of those 15 that went through our partnership, and if you don't know what partnership is, it's kind of our process for making a formal commitment to our church family, and we've intentionally called it partnership and not membership because we want to be really, really cool. We do that just because we're members of a lot of things that we actually forget that we're members of, and so we want partnership to be a sense of I'm being invested in and I'm contributing, that both of those things are happening, and so that's going on. But 15 people there, and I think one out of the 14 had been here longer than a year, and the other 14 have been around far less than that, and as we just did a quick round and said it was like a few have been about a year, most of them have kind of been in the 4 to 6 months around Mosaic, and then one was around for 1 week, which is always pretty fascinating. Yeah, I've been here 1 week. It was so great. I signed up for an all-day Saturday class, which like, wow. And so, no, that's not what they said. But it was a great reminder to me, first of all, to be able to go through who we are and why and what we believe and where God's calling us. But to watch and hear stories and to be reminded of how God has led people at different points in their life to be a part of Mosaic and have connected and found a family and found community and watched God grow them, and to look at the 15 that were a part of yesterday, which again may make a partnership commitment, may not, but to go God's continuing to bring people and to work through people, and it was awesome. It was so fun to be a part of. If you're thinking like, oh, I heard about that class and I can't believe I missed it, it was yesterday, both want you to it was an awesome class, so I want you to feel a little bad for missing it. But there's another one coming that we'll set a date, and another one will be coming, and it'll be, I'm sure it'll be great. The latest one is always the best one, so you're good. We're going to take an offering, and what we do, and I was reminded again yesterday as part of this class, that when we give together to the mission that God's called us on, and there's not some kind of outside resource stream coming in, that we actually get to contribute to our own church and our own family and help move us forward in what God's called us to. And so when we give a portion of money. It's so easy to consider our own and acknowledge that all that we have is from God anyways. And so we give a portion of it back as an act of worship. And so we're going to do that now. Some volunteers are going to come and pass some baskets. And as they go around, help it go through. And I always like to say, and we always want to be careful to say, if you're a guest here, this is not an ask for money from you. We're genuinely just glad that you chose to be with us today and hope that your experience here is actually a gift from us to you, and we're not asking for anything from you. So, glad you're here. If you don't have a Bible, once the basket's gone by, if you want to find one, locate one, there's some on the side if you want to be that bold and walk over and grab one. That's totally safe, and you'll get back to your chair just fine. If you've got one, open it up to Matthew chapter 9, or if you've got one on a screen or something like that, you can do that as well. So we're going to continue on in a series that we've been in called The Few and the Future, and we've been asking God the question, if we're part of the few that you've called to live for you in the world today and in this place in the world today, how can we be joining with you to bring about the future that you want in this world? And so we're going to continue on with that today. So let's do this. Let's pray together and then open up God's word together. So if you would, if you'd pray with me. God, standing and singing those songs that we were just led in, there's just something about hearing a bunch of your people to stand and to sing with brothers and sisters and to hear our voices declare things that are true. It's so easy to forget just basic things that are true. It's so easy to get distracted or to be reminded of other less important things, but to sing something over and over that you are good, that you're good, that you're a good father, that you invite us into relationship with you, there's something about that, God, that is so needed and necessary and deeply healing and encouraging. And so, God, would you help us to be reminded of that today? Would you help us to keep singing that? Would you help us to know that throughout our weeks and deep in our bones and in our soul, that we wouldn't forget that? And God, for some in the room today, would that be a whole new, brand new introduction to what real life is, that we know that you're good and that you love us and that you're real and alive and at work in our world today? that you alone are the God who created all, who loves us, who is full of mercy and justice and truth and power. And so, Holy Spirit, we invite you and ask you and need you to work in us today, to wake us up, to sharpen our minds on a Sunday morning so that we can think clearly and critically and discerningly, that our hearts would be safe and moldable so that you could actually direct them, that you would control us a little bit, that we would respond to you. And we feel safe in asking that because, Jesus, you came and died and rose again and are alive today. And so we want to follow you and know you, be led by you. So would you teach us now as we look to your word? In your name, amen. So if you found your way to Matthew chapter 9, I want to read a couple of verses. And for some of us, this is you've heard this is kind of on repeat. And so that's fine. It's okay that we read the same thing over and over again. But I want to read three verses because it sets us up. And what these three verses are is an experience that Jesus had. And so it describes for us a feeling that Jesus had. And then it gives us his words with something he said. So listen quickly to this. Verse 36 of chapter 9. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. His heart broke for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few." And again, that's where we get the word few. There's a few workers. There's a few people following me and partnering with me to bring about my future in the world. The workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And so Jesus looks at the people and sees that they don't know him, that they're not following him. And so he says, let's pray together for them. And in chapter 10, as we've been moving along, he then sends out his disciples to be his people, his few in the world that are working for the harvest field. And as we read this, we look around us today and say, yeah, there's so many people that don't know Jesus. And we can say, we don't talk about it in those same words. That sounds odd to say, hey, friend, you don't know Jesus. You're part of the harvest. I mean, we don't talk like that, but it's the same meaning. What Jesus was meaning is looking out and saying, there's people that don't know him. And so we've been asking the question, if we as Mosaic are part of a few that are partnering with what God's already doing in the world, that if he's active and alive and at work in the world today, what does that look like for us? And so what we're going to look at today is we're going to see some words of Jesus. And oddly enough, Jesus doesn't do this very often, but he uses animals to teach. He uses animals to say, hey, this is what it's like. And in doing so, what he does is he offers us a very needed and necessary reality check. He says, this is what the real world is like. This is what it's like. And he's just honest about it. And so I want us to see a reality check. Again, Jesus uses animals to communicate it, but it's a reality check of what's real. And then he says, here's some advice for if you're going to follow me in the world today. Here's just some needed advice that you need to know. And Jesus teaches a lot. And this is one of the rare points where he just says, and do this specific thing. Jesus talks a lot about what's right and wrong and gives us a lot of direction in life and calls us to obedience and a lot of things, but he gives us advice. And so be and do these kinds of things. And so we're going to see those two things, a reality check and advice from Jesus, and again, oddly enough, he's going to use animals, which doesn't happen very often. But so, move on down to chapter 10, verse 16. It's going to be up on the screen as well. And Jesus says these words. Verse 16, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and be flogged in the synagogues. Real warm, exciting stuff here. Flogged in the synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say. For it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father, the Holy Spirit, speaking through you. So Jesus does a couple things here, and again, he does them with animals, and he doesn't do that very often, but he offers this reality check, and he says, here, if you want an image for what it's like to be sent out, and if you were here a few weeks ago, the scene where Jesus says these things, he's talking to his disciples, and it says it names them disciples, followers of Jesus, learners. That's what we hopefully all are, as learners and followers of Jesus. But then it also echoes and it calls them apostles, which is a word we don't use very often and sounds a little odd, but apostles means several things, one of which means a sent person, a messenger. And so he says, if you want to know what it means to be a follower of me and a messenger of me, it's like being sent to sheep among wolves. And it's like, well, that's just great. Like, you know, and again, we're probably not familiar with, maybe you're familiar with wolves and sheep. I don't know. Most of us are not. But in case you can't figure it out or don't know what that's like, it's like basically one's lunch and one's eating lunch. That's the kind of sheep among wolves. The wolf always wins. There's no story where the sheep doesn't end. I mean, there's not like, you know, there's no victorious stories that we tell kids about the sheep rose up and conquered a wolf. No, it just doesn't happen. Wolves always defeat sheep. Sheep are defenseless. And there's this, and again, it's just kind of odd because we don't like being described as sheep and think like, okay, Jesus constantly is referring to people as sheep, and he refers to his own disciples as sheep. And I've shared with you before that this is something that I would love for Jesus to change. And if I had my choice, I would want to either be a lion or a velociraptor. But he doesn't ask us what we want to be described as. He says, you're like sheep. And it's not because sheep are dumb or they get sheared once a year or they just follow whatever is put in front of them. What he's saying is that you have a shepherd. He calls a sheep to be able to put himself in the place of shepherd and saying, you have somebody who cares about you. That when you're with the shepherd, you're safe, you're protected, nothing is going to harm you. So it's actually a good thing. And he also describes other people as sheep when they don't have a shepherd. His heart goes out for them, he has compassion for them. But he says, if you're going to be my sent people, you're going to be like sheep among wolves. You're defenseless. You're vulnerable. The reality check that Jesus wants us to hear in this is if you're going to follow him in this world, you're going to be in a place of vulnerability. It's not the place of command. It's not the place of power in this world's terms. It's a place of vulnerability. To follow Jesus in this world is to be vulnerable. He uses animals to make that abundantly clear. And what that means for us is that when we feel vulnerable, it's not a surprise to Jesus. When we feel like this is scary, when we feel like this is difficult, when we have questions and we have doubts of, I don't know that I can follow Jesus in this world at this time. It's too crazy. It's too much of being in the minority. It's too much of being out of place. I don't fit. Jesus is aware of that. He's actually telling us that ahead of time. We're not learning new information and then going back and going, Jesus, do you know how difficult it is? He says, no, I know how difficult it is. Remember the sheep and the wolves. I've sent my first disciples out like that. I know what that's like. It's okay. We do not have to put up a front that says I'm strong and I can do this on my own. And I've read enough that I now have every answer until somebody asks me a question about something I don't have an answer for. And then I feel embarrassed as a Christian or ill-equipped. I don't have to feel like I'm strong enough to resist every temptation in my own power. That's not what Jesus is asking us to do. We don't have to be able to step out of our room and into the world and to be strong enough on our own. He says, no, you're stepping into a place of vulnerability. And he tells us that ahead of time. We're not surprising him. He tells his own disciples, you're going to be flogged in synagogues. That was their place of worship. That was for them like their church building. I mean, that's so foreign to us to even comprehend what that would be like. Like that doesn't happen here. If you're new to Mosaic, just to tell you a little bit of our history, we not once have flogged anyone in this building. That's never happened here. We've never picked somebody and said, yep, it's your turn. Come on up here. And then publicly beat them for some reason. That's just never happened. This building was gifted to us 14 years ago. I can't speak to what happened in the building before then. I just don't know. But I know for the time Mosaic has been here, we don't do this. We don't flog people. Jesus says, you're going to be in a place of vulnerability. And then he's more specific, and he says, you're going to be flogged in synagogues. Places that are supposed to be for me and anticipating me and excited about me and preaching and teaching about me and worshiping me. The places that are supposed to be about me and my Father are going to beat you. And flogging was not some general term of like you're going to get slapped or punched or beaten. Flogging was a technical term of somebody with a leather strap is going to whip it on your back 26 times and on your chest 13 times. 39 in total. It's what Jesus got, but with bits of stuff in the leather that did more damage to his body. It was this technical term. This will happen to you. And in addition to this, you'll be arrested, it says. And you'll be put on trial. Jesus is saying, you're gonna be in a place of vulnerability and it's not going to be a surprise to me. This is what will happen. This is what it will be like. And I've experienced it. Jesus himself, the God of the universe, fully God and fully human, the person of Jesus Christ, put himself in a place of vulnerability. That's our good news. That the God of the universe came to us. He didn't flash a light and say, hey, look up and worship me. He says, I'm going to come down into where you are. I'm going to walk among you. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to be vulnerable, even to the place of going to the cross. And so Jesus says, I know what it's like to be vulnerable. It's why in his last meal with his disciples, his last moments with his disciples before he was crucified, praying with them, eating with them, talking with them, encouraging them, challenging them, teaching them, he says these words in John chapter 16, 33. He says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. I know you're going to be vulnerable. I know you're going to experience fear. I know you're going to have doubt. I know you're going to question. Have peace. In this world, you will have trouble. It's not going to be all easy. You'll have trouble. But take heart. I have overcome the world. But take heart. I win in the end. But take heart. I know exactly what it feels like. I know it's not great. But take heart. I'm with you. I'm with you. Always. I'm not going to leave you. Jesus says, I know exactly what it's going to be like. There's going to be trouble. I've overcome the world. I'm going to win in the end. Take heart. Be courageous. Stay in it. I picture the disciples kind of huddled together in a group around Jesus, and Jesus is telling them this, you know, you're sheep and wolves and flogging and beating and arrest and yippee, like, all in, let's cheer. I mean, I don't know what exactly how that moment ended, but, you know, Bartholomew kind of being on the backside and going like, can I opt out of this? Like, is there a door where I can kind of escape? And there's an escape hatch of like, yeah, I was good until I was a sheep among wolves. I'm fine being a sheep, but if you're going to put me with the wolves, like, I'm tapping out. And there's an escape hatch that many of us have available, and we've taken at times, and it's kind of always there, and we're always wondering about it. I had a friend when I was in high school. We became really close friends my senior year in high school. He was 6'10". In high school, if I would have met you in high school, I would have told you that I had a friend that was 7 feet. Because when you're standing next to a guy who's 6'10", you don't know that he's not 7 feet tall. He feels like he's 10 feet tall. If you've ever been around somebody that's that tall. And so I would tell everybody, I have a friend that's 7 feet tall. I'm more secure in myself now, and I can let you know that he was only 6'10". But we became good friends my senior year of high school. He didn't play in the NBA. He didn't even play in college, but we played on the same basketball team and did a lot of things together. We both asked girls to go to the prom with us and decided to go together as a group. And we decided to get ready at my house. And we were putting on our tux. And, you know, if you've ever been through this drill, it's just, you know, you rent a tux and then you hang it in your room. And then when you're getting dressed, and I was going through that experience and pulled on my pants and couldn't button them. I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right. This is not good. And so I crammed myself into it, and I buttoned it. And I said, I can do this. I cannot breathe for 9 hours. I'll be fine. And then I put the shirt on, and it was like this. And I was like, oh, something's wrong. And then I got really angry. And I threw the clothes in a bag, and I ran out of the house and sped down to the tuck shop and walked in and went, everybody freeze. Fix this. I got to go pick up my date shortly, get it done. And they were able to get me the right size. And I came back home, went back up into my room and pulled my pants on that fit now, put my shirt on, button it up, put my jacket in, one arm in. I went, this doesn't feel right. Put my other arm in and stood in front of the mirror, and it was hanging down off the end of my fingers. And I went downstairs and just lost it in front of my mom and just went, I don't remember what I said, but just lost it. And then she kind of listened to me and then smirked at me and then started laughing. And I turned around and looked at my 6'10" tall friend, and he had his jacket on that came down to about right here. And he had switched them while I was gone at the tuck shop. And that was, we've got a great picture, and that's just so much fun for them. And so as I saw my friend, even as I look at the picture today and see where my jacket, I'm a pretty normal size, I might be a little bit taller than average, but I'm a pretty normal sized guy, and to have my jacket come here, reminded of all the conversations we had about how he didn't fit. He just didn't fit anywhere. He didn't fit in my car hardly. His knees were all up halfway into the, you know, dashboard, and he would duck coming into classrooms and looked odd in our locker room, and would sit in the same chairs that I sat in class and just barely fit. His shoes, he just had limited options on shoes because where he had to get them from and when he could get them were nothing like a normal person. We can go and kind of buy shoes anywhere. His jeans would wear out and he'd have to wear them longer than anyone else would because it what it meant to find. I mean, he just didn't fit. And we would have these conversations and he said, I just wish I was like 4 or 5 inches shorter. I'd still be tall and that'd be great, but I wouldn't be so outsized for where I am. I just don't fit. And so many of us feel exactly like that as we're following Jesus in our city and in our culture at this time. We just feel like we don't fit. And if we could just be a few inches shorter, if there was a few things that we could kind of just shave off where we don't quite fit in, and it'd be a little more comfortable, we'd feel a little more at home. If we could just lose some of the beliefs that make us not fit in with our culture and what we see and read and around us every time. And if we could just let go of that, it's this readily available escape hatch that we can step through. And for some of us, we've taken that. We've said, this one is just too hard to believe this. And so I'm going to adjust it or edit it or change it. And we feel a little more at home in this world. And Jesus says, I know what it's like to be there. His disciples would tell us if they were standing here today, we know what it's like. And to that, Jesus gives us this advice. He says, this is how to be. You don't have to go through that escape hatch. You don't have to shave off parts of who you are or change your beliefs or adjust yourself to make yourself more comfortable. There's another way, and he gives us this advice, and he uses animals again, and he says this, the rest of verse 16, therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves, which, again, snakes and doves are not animals that many of us aspire to be. I don't know how many of you like aspire to be a dove. Like that's really great. You know, like what does a dove do? You know, it's like there's not like a dove's never attacked anything. Like there's not like been an attack of doves on something that's taken new ground. And that's, I mean, doves are this kind of harmless. Some even translate that as gentle or harmless as a dove, which that's not quite what Jesus is getting at there. To be as shrewd as a snake, like really aspire to be a snake. Like no, I'm not like. What is Jesus really saying here? When he talks about shrewd, that shrewd's not a word that we use a whole lot. A closer word to what we would use is wise. Be as wise as snakes, or maybe you've heard the phrase wise as serpents. And even that doesn't quite make sense because we have such a negative view of snakes and of serpents. But what it's getting at is to be aware. The best way I can say it is this discerning awareness of what's going on around you. That Jesus is not calling us to shut off and to shut down and ignore what's going around us, to be unaware of what people around us believe and do and act and aspire to. He's not saying don't know how the world works. He's saying be aware of it, be informed, be intelligent and wise about it. Even be engaged in the world around you. Don't eject and bail. Be discerningly aware. When we think of serpents and specifically as snakes, we encounter snakes often when we step into their territory. The snakes don't come out of anywhere and just start attacking people. That doesn't happen. It's when we step into where they already are. It's when we cross their path that they're aware of us and stuff. And that's what Jesus is saying is be discerningly aware of your surroundings. Watch for what's going around you. Look closely at the people and the ideas and the teachings and the culture that's going on around you. Be aware of it and understand it and be informed, but remain as innocent as doves. Don't seek to do it harm. Don't seek to manipulate, but be innocent. The word innocence it's used for the process of refining metal, which the New Testament uses a number of times to describe a follower of Jesus becoming more like Jesus. There's more parts of us that Jesus is constantly refining, that metal, the idea is metal being heated up and the impurities skimmed off the top, that metal eventually becomes pure or innocent. It's also described as wine that is served at the end of a party. It was commonplace to serve wine, the best of the wine, at the beginning. And then people would get, let's say, comfortable or buzzed or just flat out drunk after drinking wine for a certain amount of time. And then once they're there, the host would bring out wine that's been cut with water. And so they're saving wine later in the party because when you're drunk, apparently you can't taste anyways. And so they would do that. And it says, that's not innocent wine. Innocent wine is the best at the beginning that's pure. He says, so be pure. And then think of it this way, that what you see is what you get. We know those people in our lives, don't we? We know the ones that we're close with, that we can trust, that when we're riding back and forth with, or when we're sitting together and we see them eyeball to eyeball, we know, I can trust this person. They're not going to try to manipulate me. They're not going to try to lead me down another path. But I can be with them. They're trustworthy. Jesus says, be that kind of people. Be trustworthy and be pure. Don't have ulterior motives. But also be shrewd, be wise, be aware, be informed of what's going on around you. One author said it this way. He said, to be shrewd without innocence leads to manipulation. That we use our craftiness and cunning to get what we want. That's shrewd without being innocent. And innocence without shrewdness leads to being naive, of duped, of pulled in any direction. He says, don't be either one of those. Be both wise and innocent together. Martin Luther King phrased it this way, be of tough mind and soft heart. Be both. Be that kind of people where you are, knowing that you're vulnerable, knowing that you're still like a sheep among wolves, and knowing that not everybody is wolves, but there are some wolves who are opposed to Jesus, that are against Jesus and against you because you're for Jesus. And so when you're around those and in those places, be both wise and innocent. The story and the character of Daniel in the Old Testament is a great example for us in this way. Daniel was a leader among his age group, that he was young, but he was already excelling beyond most his age. And when Babylon invaded Israel and took over, they took the cream of the crop. They took the leaders, the future influencers, those that were being educated and were influencing others, and they took them back to Babylon, and Daniel was one of those. And they tried to reprogram him and put their culture into him and his ideas. And so he was provided for. He was allowed to live. They weren't beating him. He wasn't in prison. But he was being trained to be a Babylonian and to be sent back into Israel to influence that culture and to make it like their own. And when he was there, the language isn't used, but certainly the behavior and the story tells us that he was both wise and innocent. And what he did in combining those two was keep God's perspective for where he was. And so that when he was required to go to astrology class, and he said, I'm told not to believe in this stuff and not to trust the what's in the sky and what we see from our corner of the planet at our point in history. But he had to sit through astrology classes as they were trying to make him in their images in Babylon. And he says, I can go to the class and I can listen and I can pass the test and I can excel and I can understand it, but that doesn't mean I have to believe it. That doesn't mean I have to buy into it and live my life according to it as if it's true and going to influence my life. And so he said, I can participate in that without becoming that. And he did all sorts of things, and he didn't compromise on his food. He said, hey, is it an option that I could eat a kosher meal and do this? And if you know the story there, he actually influenced those that were feeding him by what he ate, because he was more healthy than the others that were eating their food. He didn't compromise when it came to praying. He says, I'm not going to bow down. I'm going to go to your worship gatherings, but I'm not going to bow down to your God, because he doesn't exist and he's not real. And I know the one true God. And so you can make laws about me not praying, but that's not going to stop me from praying. I'm going to go in my room. And if my window is open, so be it, but I'm going to continue to pray to my God. And if you want to arrest me and march me down the street and put me in the lion's den and have a lion devour me and end my life for now, then so be it. And if you know the story, he's thrown in the lion's den and God shuts the lion's mouth, and he comes out, and the leaders look at him and go, there's something different about you. Tell us about your God. Daniel's a great example of being aware of his surroundings and being wise and at the same time remaining pure, that he did both. He didn't eject and ignore everything around him and try to make himself naive in some way. And he didn't try to use the opportunity he had to manipulate with some ulterior motive. He did both, and he stayed in it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were another one of his contemporaries, three of his contemporaries that were thrown into the fire because they wouldn't bow down in public to a false god. Wonderful story. Thrown into the fire and not burned up. A miracle. And then the leaders go, look, what is it that's different about you? That these people remained wise and innocent. They remained God's people in a very ungodly environment. And in so doing, we're able to point back to the one true God. We have that opportunity to be God's people, God's men and women, to point back to him. I had a friend here I met when I first started at Mosaic, and his wife had worked in a coffee shop, and a friend from Mosaic started going to that coffee shop and befriended her and eventually shared Jesus with her, and she came to believe in Jesus, and then she led her husband to Jesus, and I ended up with him in a men's group a few years after he came to faith in Jesus, and they had a couple kids together and were living together, and they decided to get married and got married and were following Jesus together, and his job was to fix lottery machines. His full-time job, he went around, traveled around and fixed lottery machines that, maybe you don't know this, but all lottery machines are in churches and Christian bookstores. And so he would go into those constant, no. Lottery machines are in all sorts of different places, and many of them, I'm told, are in strip clubs. Fairly new follower of Jesus, fairly new married guy, going into strip clubs on a weekly basis to fix lottery machines because it's his job. And he talked about what that was like. And as he shared, I realized you're wise and innocent at the same time. That you're going into a place that could be extremely tempting. And as the men in our group kind of said, and I don't know where all of them are, and I don't even know where all of you are. As you hear that, you're like, some of you might even be thinking like, maybe I'm supposed to fix lottery machines. If you're thinking that, just let's go with no for now. But he told us, like, it's not necessarily tempting in the way that you think it's tempting. So I've not been in a strip club, but apparently they're not as much fantasy as you would think in Northeast Portland, apparently. But he said it's still tempting. And so he said, I would walk into these, I've had to learn how to just go to where I need to go to and just look where I need to look and how to honor the people that are there. And even if I do get in a conversation with a woman who's not up on a stage or something, is to respect her and to look her in her eye. And to talk to the men there and to be a different kind of person in that environment. And to, when I'm with my company and my managers, is to not make that something that it's not for me. And to be both wise and yet innocent. And to be in pure in a place and not in denial and not aware of the environment I'm in. And after a number of months and time went on, he said, you know what I realize is that I'm able to be somebody who's not in those places normally. I'm able to be a person who loves Jesus in those. I'm able to be a light in those dark places, both in my company and when I walk into a strip club to fix a lottery machine. If we're going to follow Jesus and live in this city and in this culture at this time, we're going to be vulnerable in some way at some time. For some of us, that's more often and more regular and more daily than it is for others. But to see the opportunity that we have in the calling, the advice from Jesus to be wise and innocent, and so to live in a place of vulnerability, and to have that opportunity to be a light for Jesus. The reality is that each and every one of us would not be here today if at some point in our story, whether it's our own story or somebody before us, a parent or a loved one that led us to Jesus, that someone along the way stepped into a vulnerable relationship, a vulnerable context, made themselves vulnerable to live for Jesus and to talk about him. And that's how we're all here today, is somebody did that. And when we say, who are the few and what is the future? We say, I think it's us. And we have to learn how to follow Jesus' advice to be in the places of work that we're in, to be in the places of education that we're in, to be in the places of where we live, our residence, our apartment or home or neighborhood where we are, to step out and to be in a place of vulnerability and to trust that Jesus has overcome and that we can have peace and trust him in the here and now. Here's my question for you today that I want you to consider. We're going to continue to worship and to come to these tables, and we're reminded, even in these tables, of how Jesus made himself vulnerable, that he went to the cross and was beaten and crucified. But I want to ask you to do this before you come to one of these tables right now. Would you ask yourself this question? Jesus, who is the person or the group of people in my life that you want my heart to be broken for, to have compassion on in the same way that you had compassion, and that you have compassion today? Who is that person, that small group of people that you want me to be a light to, that it will be a challenge to be both wise and innocent around? And so Jesus, I ask you is to help us to answer that question right now, right in this moment, this minute, that you would put a face or a name, or maybe it's already abundantly clear to us and we knew it before we even heard the rest of the question, that this is the family, this is the couple, this is the neighbor, this is the manager, this is the coworker, this is the employee that do you want me to be a light to? That you want me to mention your name to at some point? That you want me to step into a place of, of vulnerability and to trust you in. And Jesus, I want to ask right now that you would give us the courage and the power, and not our words, but your words, that you would help us to take this for what some of us is just a giant risk and a giant leap of faith, to think that you could work through us. And so would you show up in powerful and significant ways and work through us? Would you help us to be strong and bold? Would you help us to be wise and innocent?